So we are holding on Nunhe on the day's fifth line. The last thing we talked about is the idea that we said the Pros is higher than all the other rivers in the world. Well, again, what that means hydrographically, it's hard to say, but it means to a certain extent hydrographically and to a certain extent erroneous. We said that you have, there's a river that flows out of Gan Eden, then it divides into four major rivers. Three of them have other names, the Pishon, the Gihon, and the Chidekel, and the original river continues to flow on as the Pros. Tanya, we learn in a Braisa. Rav Meir Omer Yuval Shmoy. Rav Meir says that the real name of the Pros is the Yuval. Shenema. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah. V'hoyo keitz shosel amayim. We quote in Hilkei Avos as well, that a person who trusts in Hashem will be like a tree that's planted by water. V'al Yuval Yishalach Sharoshav, and that it spreads its roots along the Yuval, and it goes on to say that it never has to worry about the heat or any other problems or whatever. In the same way, a person who trusts in Hashem is always guaranteed that Hashem will be at his side. So the point is, therefore, so Rashi explains, the Pasuk is comparing such a person to the Eitz HaChayim that was in Gan Eden, and if we're saying that it stands by the Yuval and then spreads out, hello, and spreads out its roots along the Yuval, then there you go. Then the Yuval is that original river, hello, then there's that original river that comes out of Gan Eden and branches out into the other rivers.
Maybe there would be another one in Gan Eden.
No, because we said there's one river that comes out of Gan Eden, the Nahar Yotzei Me'Eden, a river comes out of Eden, Lahashkes HaGan, to water the garden, and Misham Yipadet, and from there it divides, V'hoyal Arbar Roshan, and it becomes four major rivers, which are the Pishon, the Gihon, and the Chidekel on the Pros. So if we're saying that we're comparing, and remember also the prophet tells us that Eitz HaChayim is Besoich HaGan, in the middle of Gan Eden. So therefore, we're saying the Eitz HaChayim. So if we're comparing a person who trusts in Hashem, if we're comparing a person who trusts in Hashem to the Eitz HaChayim, as Rashi says, then and it's by a river, then that river must be, and the Pasuk says that this tree stands by the Yuval, then the proper name of the river must be Yuval.
So then Gan Eden is not in Israel then.
Who said it was? I never said it was.
Turkey.
Okay, maybe it's in Turkey, maybe it's again, we talked yesterday. Why not? I mean, listen, we said yesterday that after all, when you get down to it, I mean, the Gihon again, not the Gihon, the Pishon, Rashi identifies the Pishon as the Nile. The Nile doesn't begin in Turkey, the Nile begins in Central Africa. So obviously there must be, we're talking about then, there's a river that's someplace in the world, and then it goes underground and it reemerges in different places in the world, including as the headwaters of the Nile and as the headwaters of the Chidekel on the Pros, and the headwaters of the Gihon, whatever river
the
Gihon.
Maybe it does come from there as well.
So maybe, okay,
maybe
whatever.
Underground.
Fine, maybe, okay. So Volomenik Rashmoy Pros, so in that case, if the real name of the river is Yuval, then why is it called Pros? Shemem of Porim Berobim, because its water is fruitful and multiplies, meaning Rashi says that the river grows in size even when there's no rain, over there.
So the name should be Pros.
So the name should be Pros in the Russian Pora, that it increases, and therefore it's called Pros.
Porim
Berobim, fine. So then the Sof is a feminine suffix, whatever. Okay. Messiah Leilishmuel. Now this point that we're saying and Shitim Kubesis adds a line, that the Chachamim disagree with Reb Meir and say that no, the actual proper name of the river is Pros. Not like Reb Meir says that its real name is Yuval and it's called Pros because of its characteristics, but rather the Chachamim say its actual real name is Pros. Okay. Messiah Leilishmuel. This that we're saying, that Reb Meir is saying, that the waters of the Pros multiply and grow even without rain, Messiah le Shmuel. That supports what Shmuel says. Omer Shmuel, Nara Mikefe Mivrich. Shmuel says that a river grows based on, a river grows from its bed, or from its source. Kefa literally means the rocks or the banks of it. In other words, Shmuel says that basically when a river increases in size, mostly it comes from underground springs that feed it. You have the original spring that the river comes from, like we talked yesterday about the Yarden comes from the spring in the cave of Pamnes. Similarly, most other large rivers in the world begin as springs someplace in mountains or whatever. So Shmuel says when a river grows in size, mostly that's because of an extra flow from its original source or from other water sources along its
tributaries.
Yeah, it's tributaries, whatever. Upliga de Rab. Now, in that case, what Shmuel is saying on that disagrees with Rab's understanding of it. The Omer of Ami Omer Rab, Mitra b'Ma'arava, when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, Sada Rabba Pras. We have a big witness for it in Bavel, namely the Pras River, because the Pras goes from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel. So when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, then the Pras gets bigger. So therefore, you can see. So therefore, we in Bavel, in other words, Rab is saying, we're Rab Ami is saying, we in Bavel are able to know when it's rained in Eretz Yisrael because we see that the Pras is larger than usual. So we see, therefore, so Rab is saying that a river, mainly, that the Pras at least, and maybe rivers in general, grow more from extra rainfall.
Number one, and number two, the Pras originates in Eretz Yisrael.
Fine. Well, again, we're not saying that it originates in Eretz Yisrael, but upstream of it is near Eretz Yisrael. You and I talked about this yesterday. The fact is, the Torah does mention the Pras as one of the borders of Eretz Yisrael. Does that mean part of the original borders? Does it mean part of the extended borders? Does it mean that the, does it mean maybe that part of the basin of the Pras River is in Eretz Yisrael? Whatever. In fact, Steinzahl points out on this Gemara over here that they found that there is like some kind of correlation between the amount of rain that falls in the Middle East in general, including Eretz Yisrael, and the size, not specifically of the Pras, but in general of the rivers in that part of the world. In other words, even though they come from Turkey, there was a certain correlation between the weather patterns in Eretz Yisrael and in Turkey, for example. So yeah, so in that sense, okay. So again, according to Shmuel, the main growth of a river comes from the underground springs that feed it, and according to Rab, the main growth of a river comes from the rain. Now, what it tells us, ultimately, yeah, but we're talking about what's the more direct thing. So therefore, so here is a practical thing that comes out of this in Halacha. Avur de Shmuel, the father of Shmuel, who was one of the early Amoraim, late Tanoim, early Amoraim, whatever, and he was a distinguished Rav in Babel, this is Shmuel's father. Shmuel's father. Throughout Shas, he himself was a distinguished Talmud Chacham, but throughout Shas he's usually called Avur de Shmuel. Partly because, I mean, first of all, he was outshone by his son, but also there's a famous story, I don't remember the mocker of it, I think it's Mrs. Goyim tells the story, I don't remember, that, to make a long story short, one time he was away from home on a business trip, and a Goyish woman who was a sorceress propositioned him to have relations with her, because she had seen in her astrology that tonight he is destined to have, to father a son who's going to grow up to be a great person, and she wanted to be the mother of that child. So he uses the shame of Hashem and makes it back to his hometown that night by the Kippur Zaderach, has relations with his wife, and then leaves on the trip again. And that night Shmuel was conceived. The rest of the story is then that later on when Shmuel, so meanwhile, Avur de Shmuel was still away on his month-long trip. So when Shmuel's mother is visibly pregnant, people start talking, it must be she was Mizana or something. Not Shmuel HaNavi, this is Shmuel the Amora. So they actually brought her to Beis Din and whipped her for it. The upshot is, no, she was still alive. She gave birth. She lived to give birth to... They whipped her, yeah. They gave her malchus. They whipped her, yeah. But anyway, the point is that later on, when Shmuel was born, and eventually when he grew up to be the great Amor... One second. Because they thought. Because they okay, you're fine, but you need two witnesses to do mitzvah. To do malchus, you need less than that. Anyway, whatever you need, they felt they had enough evidence. Anyway, the point is, later on, eventually, when Shmuel became the great Talmud Chacham and the great Amorah Shmuel, so everybody realized that what happened, or maybe even when Shmuel's father came back and told them, whatever it is, so from then on, they called him Avur de Shmuel, in recognition, he really is Shmuel's father. We were wrong in suspecting his mother. They whipped her because they thought she was Mizana, yeah. Okay, anyway, getting back to the Gemara. So Avur de Shmuel...
Where did you get that?
It's a well-known story. I don't remember the original source of it. It might be from Nissen Goyen. I don't remember. But it's a story that's brought in various places. Avur de Shmuel, Ovid Lahu Libnose. So Avur de Shmuel prepared for his daughters Mikveh B'yomei Nissen U'Maptzi B'yomei Tishrei. He prepared for them a mikveh. When they have to go to the mikveh every month. So he prepared for them mikvahs in the house rather than that they should tovel in rivers during the days of Nissen and Maptzi during the days of Tishrei. So what's going on over here? So Rashi explains like this. During Tishrei time, they could tovel in the rivers. Because Tishrei time, you don't have. There's no more snow melt. You don't have. The river, any water that's in the river is necessarily coming from its source. Now, we have to realize like this.
During Tishrei time?
Yeah, because think of it. I mean, you have the snow melt is missing time. So by Tishrei, 6 months later...
The crops are maturing in September.
So what? Yeah. No, we're talking about in Babel, where it doesn't rain in Babel, like in Eretz Yisrael, it doesn't rain during Tishrei, is when it starts raining. You have a little bit of rain maybe in Tishrei. Mostly the rainy season starts in Cheshvan, the Cheshvan Kislev. Yeah, that's why, and actually, we follow B'nai Babel, we start davening for Talim, the same Talim Otter in early December. So that was when the rainy season generally began in Babel. Mafti means mat. Okay, so one second. So we need a little background. We know that a woman has to tovel when she's a nidder or a zava. We know also there's two different kinds of bodies of water that a person can tovel in. One is a mikveh, and the other one is a mayan. There's a number of differences between a mikveh and a mayan. A mayan is a spring. Among them are that a mayan can be metaher even when the water is flowing. Classic example, anybody who's been to the Arizal's mikveh, the water is constantly flowing through, and it's kosher to tovel in. It would be kosher not only for us men, who don't, strictly speaking, need to tovel as a matter of halacha, but even if a woman wanted to tovel there, it would be perfectly kosher as a mikveh for a nidder or a zava. Yeah, it is freezing, that's true, but that's neither here nor there, because it's because it's mayim chayim, it's living water from a spring. It comes directly from a spring, and such water is metaher even if it's moving. It's zoichalim, it's called. On the other hand, if you have a mikveh made from rainwater or whatever, in this case we're talking about also a river, then it has to be still water. So Rashi over here explains actually there's another difference as well, which is the pasuk tells us that a zav, a male zav, the only thing he can tovel in to become tahor is mayim chayim. Rashi over here brings an explanation that a zava, a female zav, may have the same issue. Now, when a woman is a nidah, especially nowadays, you have a suffix, whether she's a nidah or a zava. It's hard to keep track. When are the days of nidah? When are the days of zava? We're going to learn about that in a few weeks in Erchin, Bezat Hashem. We'll learn about it in more detail in nidah in a few months. But so Rashi over here brings an explanation, which is actually from his Rebbein, that what it is Shmuel's father was concerned that his daughters might be zavas, and therefore they need mayim chayim. So therefore, again, during Tishrei time, there's no problem. During Tishrei time, they could tovel in a river because then, inevitably, any water that's in that river comes eventually from the springs that feed the river and its various tributaries. But in Nisan time, when you have snow melt and you have rain, and you have rain that's filling up the river, then it's not from a Maya, and then you have this rainwater in there also. Therefore, during Nisan time, he would have to actually make the mikvahs in the house, rather than where they would have to arrange mayim chayim for it, rather than in the river.
So in Tishrei, you're saying it's a mayim.
So in Tishrei, it's a mayim, and in Nisan, it's not. Right. Now, so over here, Rashi brings the matter about mayim chayim. In Shabbos, actually, this Gemara is also in Shabbos, and Rashi actually rejects that explanation over there, because he says, the fact is, a zava does not have to tovel in mayim chayim. A zava just has to tovel in a regular mikveh, just like a nidah. Only a male zav has to tovel in mayim chayim. Yeah. So Rashi, and the fact of the matter is, nowadays, when we keep the halakha of taras and mishpacha, all wives are considered, there is sophic nidah, sophic zava, that's why we count the way we do. And yet they don't have to go to a mayim to tovel, they go and tovel in a mikveh, and it's perfectly kosher. So Rashi over there brings another explanation that some people want to say that rainwater that's dripping would be considered like mayim shovim, it would be considered like drawing water, and would pass on a mikveh. Rashi doesn't like that explanation over there either in Shabbos. He says what it is the problem is this matter of zoichalin versus dashbore. A maya, again, can be metaher even when the water is flowing. A mikveh cannot. The water has to be still. That's why in many mikvahs they have to turn off the filter before you tovel in it. So the problem is over here that if they're toveling in a river, when it's not a maya, then the water is flowing. Therefore, you have a problem in the river. That's what we're talking about. Therefore, so he would make for them the mikvahs. According to this explanation, not necessarily did the mikvahs have to be springs, but at least they had to be mikvahs in the sense that the water is in one place. Tishrei is still Nisan time because you can't tovel on the river because there's too much.
Tishrei, okay. So
Tishrei would be okay because anything in the river there comes from a spring, and a spring is kosher where there's kosher.
There's no particular amount or percentage of the water that comes from a
mayan. But the point is during Nisan time you might well have that more of the water in the river comes from rain and snow melt and whatever rather than from the springs. Yeah. So that's why he would make them mikvahs during Nisan, and then he would make them maktsi. He would prepare for them mats during Tishrei, which means during Tishrei they could tovel in the river, but he would make for them mats in order that they should stand on them, because otherwise their feet are going to get stuck in the mud over there, and then it's going to be a tevila, and then it's going to be a chitzah. like this, during Tishrei time, they can put them at the bottom. Yeah, so you take mats and put them and then throw them down so they'd lay it. So they, yeah, well, I mean, they're not going into the deep part of the river to tovel. They're toveling near the bank, relatively speaking. But he would put mats over there so that they have what to stand on so their feet don't get all muddy because the mud would be chasitza. So that's Rashi's explanation of matzi.
Why can't they just swim? I mean, with their head, what do they have to be on the bottom?
Because the fact is, you got to stand on something in order to get into the water. So yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to be able to position.
You have
to position your body a certain way. If you look in Shulchan Aruch and you look in the description of the mikveh in the back of the altar of the Shulchan Aruch, you see there's a certain way to stand. In Shulchan Aruch mentions that she stands and then bows at the waist.
Sure.
No, but the point is, you have to stand on something. So therefore, they would stand on these mats, and that way they don't get mud on their feet. Now, actually, we learn in Mitzvahs, in the Perek that we learn in Mitzvahs for Yahrzeit and for the 11 months and whatever, we mention over there that if you're dipping a bed into a mikveh, it's no problem if the legs of the bed go into thick mud because the water got to them first. Why wouldn't that work over here? One explanation is because a bed's legs are solid. A person's feet, you have spaces between the toes. So you can have mud and get stuck in there and it'll be considered a chatzitza. Anyway, all of that is Rashi's explanation. Tosfos gives a different explanation, which is that he would set up mats for them, not underground, not underfoot, but rather around them for tzniyas. Because if they're going to tovel in the river, you can't have people looking at them. So therefore, they could tovel in the river, fine, but they need the mats up as a screen so they could tovel for tzniyas. Okay, so let's...
put a chair instead of putting a mat at the bottom of the river.
Okay, so you put something for them to stand on, the point is. Okay. Mikveh b'yomei Nissan. So let's analyze what Avod Shmuel was doing. He set up for them the kvoris during Nissan time because Sovel HaKarav, because he holds like Rav, who said before that the Omer Rav Ami Omer Rav Mitra B'mal Rav Sahad Rav Pras, that when it rains in Eretz Yisrael, you have a big witness for it, namely that the Pras is larger. Therefore, the problem is Shema Yubu Noitfin Ala Zoichalin. The problem is, therefore, you may have more dripping from the rain and from what drips off the mountains and whatever into the water might be more than the Zoichalin, might be more than the flowing water that came from the spring. And then Bahá'u'lláh makes Shamim Rubba. Then the rainwater becomes a roiv, and you can't tovel in it. Again, according to Rashi's first explanation, a zava can't tovel in it. According to the second explanation, it's the rainwater would be considered mayim shorvim. And according to the third explanation, a zava definitely cannot tovel in mayim chayim. A zav has to tovel in mayim chayim. A zava. So Rashi over here brings this as the explanation. In Shabbos, Rashi mentions that this is an explanation from his rebbeim, but he disagrees with it, that a zava also has to tovel in mayim chayim.
She cannot.
According to that, she can't tovel in a mikveh. Now that's not accepted. La halacha. The halacha is that a zava can tovel in a mikveh. According to Rashi over here, which again, Rashi is bringing over here just the explanation from his Rebbeim, she can only, a nida could tovel on a mikveh, but a zava would need mayim chayim. That's the point. Because not only there wouldn't be a way to get to, but the point is you have so much rainwater in the river, there might be, percentage-wise, more rainwater in there than spring water. So therefore it would be a mikveh. So again, either it's not mayim chayim, either the problem is it's not mayim chayim, or the problem is that rainwater is like shu'ovim, if it falls into a mikveh, or the third explanation in Shabbos. Because Rashi brings an explanation over there that the olam learns that way, he says. However, if it falls into the mikveh directly, then he says it might. Okay, whatever. Rashi's preferred explanation in Shabbos, in the Gemara in Shabbos, is that the problem is, again, it's not a problem, sure, you can tovel in rainwater, a zava can tovel in rainwater, but it has to be still water, it can't be moving. In a river, it's moving. So therefore, they can't tovel in it, so therefore they would. Therefore, you'd have to arrange mikvahs for them.
So
according to that third explanation, neither a nida nor a zava could tovel in it. Any person who needs to tovel cannot tovel in a river that time of year because you have too much rainwater in it. And the rainwater, and the point is, the water is moving. In a lake, the water is not moving. In a lake, the water is not necessarily moving. Okay.
What about the Dead Sea?
I don't know. I guess. Okay. On the other hand, umakti b'yomei Tishrei, and then he would set up for the mat during Tishrei, again, according to Rashi, that they can tovel in the river, but they have to stand on the mats, according to Tosfos, that they would put up the mats for tzniyos so that they could tovel without people looking at them. The Rambam actually gives a third explanation, which is they would put up the mats also so the water is still, because the Rambam learns that even though, fine, the river is, at that time of year is mostly spring water, but it's not necessarily all. There might be some water from other sources in it also, and therefore, again, it can't be flowing, and therefore you put the mask in order to create an area of still water in it.
And that works?
Yeah. Okay.
The water can still go to the
mask. It basically stays still. Now, so then, so Shmuel, now Shmuel's statement before, Shmuel said that a river mainly grows from its underground sources. That statement of Shmuel disagrees with a different statement of Shmuel. D'ama Shmuel, ein amayim nitarin b'zeichelin, ela pras v'yemetishe. Because Shmuel says that the only time that water is kosher when it's flowing, that water, that it's kosher to flow in, is only the pras during tishre time. Because again, during Tishrei time, you have no rainwater or snow melt or whatever in it. It's purely from its underground springs, as opposed to the rest of the year. Apparently, there is a concern that there might be other kinds of water mixed in it. So we see that disagrees, because Shmuel himself was saying before that the river grows from its underground sources. So okay, Mefoshim say, so there's so a different Mefoshim talk about. I mean, this is what we're saying, that Shmuel's two statements disagree. What it is, in other words, there's Shmuel's theoretical opinion and there's his practical opinion. Theoretically, a river mainly grows from its underground springs. Practically speaking, we have to be machmir, like his father did, and say that only during Tishrei time could you tell about it. Water cannot make you tahor when it's flowing. Ela pros, b'yemet Tishrei, only the pros during Tishrei, and only pros during Tishrei. Because during Tishrei, there's no rainwater in it. Before Shmuel was saying that all year round, a river mainly grows from its underground springs. So if we were to take that view, we would say you could turn on a river anytime during the year, even though the water is flowing.
But
he was talking about rivers in general. But fine, the point is that
he
was talking about the trust. Fine, same difference. So the point is that the point is that before Shmuel was saying that a river grows from its underground sources, which would mean that no matter what time of year you could tovel on it, even though it's flowing. And now he's saying only during Tishrei time, which
is a contradiction.
Okay, you don't think. That's what the Gemara is saying. It's a contradiction. So I don't see why you don't see it's a contradiction. There he said. Because, in other words, he's saying that even during the winter, even though it's raining a lot, and even though there's snow melting and whatever, you're still able to tovel in the river, because the growth of the river is not so much from the rain and the snow melting and whatever, but rather from the underground springs themselves are discharging more water.
But then it's not getting more water because it comes from the
spring. That's fine, but once it gets into the spring, then it's considered spring water. So therefore, if now he's saying that you can only tovel on the pros only Tishrei time, then that means that's a contradiction between these two statements. So again, one possibility is one of them is in theory and the other one is in practice. In practice, when it comes to the dinim of toveling, you've got to be machmir. Now, you actually have a machlokas rishonim. Who is the halacha like over here? Is the halacha like Rav and like Avor d'Shmuel, that the only time you can tovel in a river is when you're absolutely sure that there's no rainwater or whatever in it? Or is it like Shmuel's first statement, which is you could any time during the year? Tosfos gets into a long discussion over here. You have a long Tosfos over here that begins at the bottom of this Amud and takes up most of the next Amud, Ein Amayim Nitarin B'Zeichelin, where Tosfos met Rabbeinu Tam learns that actually you are allowed to tovel in a river any time during the year. Maybe Avur Shmuel didn't want to do that because of Maris Ayin, because it looks like you're toveling in rainwater when it's moving. So Tosfos gets into a long discussion about all the pros and cons of it, and brings that, yeah, Rabbeinu Tam says you would be able to tovel in a river any time during the year. Now, many of the other Rishonim, because like Shmuel's first statement, Narami Kepe Nivrach, that basically the river is growing because its springs are discharging more water, which fine. In other words, that water in turn may have come from rain that soaks into the ground, but fine, it comes out of the spring, and therefore it's considered spring water. Okay, so that's Tosfos's point. Many other Rishonim disagree with Tosfos on that. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings that ideally, you shouldn't tovel in a river. When a woman needs to tovel, or any person who needs to tovel, as a matter of strict halacha, we're not talking about we men who tovel as a matter of minhag.
Right.
Then you should not in a river. And then Amos says, okay, maybe if you need to, then you can be somach and Rabbeinu Tam the shita and tovel in a river. But otherwise, if you can help it, you shouldn't. But you should only tovel in an actual mikveh, either in a mikveh or in a mayan.
And not in?
Not in a river that flows, because the water in that river may not be from a Mayan. Okay. Mishnah says, halakeach, if a person buys animals, getting back now to Maisa Behema, halakeach, if a person buys animals from somebody else, or if he was given animals as a gift, potter mi Maisa Behema, then he is potter from taking Maisa from those animals. So the Gemara says, Minahani Mili, where do we know that from? Omer of Kahana, do Omer Kro, because like this, the pasuk says, "B'chor banecha titenli, you should give me the firstborn of your sons," meaning that you drew pidyon aven for them. And then the next pasuk continues, "Kein tasa l'shorcha l'tzeinecha, so you should do for your oxen and for your sheep." So we have a hekesh between pidyon aven and ma'aser behema. Now we're going to ask in a second that pasuk seems to be talking about b'chor, so we'll get to that in a second. But we have a hekesh between b'chor adam and behema. Therefore, we learn from that. We're going to ask about that. Ma bonecho ein belakuach of matana. Just like your children, there's no such thing as that you bought them or that you were given them as a gift. They were born in your household. Afsoincho v'karcha ein belakuach. The same thing. Your sheep or your oxen, when you're taking ma'aser behema from them, would not apply if you bought them.
Ein
belakuach matana, meaning your sons, where you have a son that you're making pidyon aven on, you didn't buy him, he wasn't given to you as a gift, your wife gave birth to him.
I would say uva matana.
Belakuach uva matana, bought or given as a gift.
Children are
not purchased and they're not given as gifts. So the same way an animal did. So are you animals in that case. But the same thing. Your animals cannot have been bought or gifted to you from another human being. So the question is, if you do, then they're not chayv in ma'aser behema.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what we mean. So the question is, v'chayv b'chor k'tiv, what are you talking about? That pasuk is talking about b'chor. The answer is, omakra kein tasa. Sure, but the pasuk doesn't just say, l'shorcho l'tzenecha. It says, kein tasa. So you should do for your shor and your son. Meaning, therefore, in ena inin l'b'chor, so the pasuk cannot actually be talking about a b'chor, deloy ise ba'asiya, because there's no doing that you have to do to a b'chor. A b'chor automatically becomes kaddish. Deberechem kaddish, it's kaddish as soon as it exits the womb. Tnei inin l'maisa behema, then you have to say that the pasuk is referring instead to maisa behema. Now, because there you have a kasa, because there you have to do it. You have to count it and then mark it as Ma'isa Behema. Tosfos points out, actually, we did learn earlier in the Masechta that this pasuk is actually referring to Bechor as well. However, Tosfos says there's two different things. We can darsh in, the fact is, the context is talking about a Bechor, therefore we can say it does teach us a din about Bechor, but because it uses the word Kaseh, we can also understand that it's also teaching us a din about Ma'isa Behema.
So we still would include Bechor.
No, so again, Bechor is not really relevant. Because Tasseh is not relevant here. So therefore, yeah. Okay, so the question is, if you're telling me that we're learning from the word Tasseh, and you're going to say that because of that, we're going to refer to Ma'aser Behema, there's a lot of other korbanos that you have to make them kaddish. Behema tneu in l'chatas of Oshem. Maybe say that it refers to a chatas and an Oshem. Maybe you're not allowed to use an animal that you bought or were given as a gift, as a chatas or an Oshem. The answer is Dumya de Bincha. Okay, but we still have the comparison with your son. Ma Bincha She'ene Ba'achet. Your son doesn't come as a result of an Avera. You're not bringing your son and forbidding a ben because you did an Avera. So the same thing. The soncha and the korcha of the pasuk can't be referring to something that you're bringing because of Avera. Well, wait. The aim of Tnei in the Oilo L'Shlomim. Maybe then say that it's talking about an Oilo L'Shlomim, which don't come for Chet either. Again, Dumya de Bincha. Again, we have to compare it to Bincha. Ma Bincha She'ene Ba B'Neder U'Nedava. Your son, you don't do Pidyon Aben as a result of a Neder or a Nedava. Again, it's an automatic thing. Son Chav Sherecha, all the same thing. Son Chav and Sherecha can't be the result of you made a Neder or you made a Nedava that you're going to bring a carbon. The Ema, so therefore it can't be Erlo Rishlam. So Chatas and Ashram are excluded because it's not Ba'al. What? An Oilo Rishlamim. Yeah, how do you bring an Oilo Rishlamim? You made a Neder, you made an Adaba. Yeah, either you made a Neder, I'm going to bring a Korban, and then you designated this particular animal to fulfill the Neder, or to begin with, you said, I'm making an Adaba, I'm going to bring this animal as a Korban. Yeah, so where's your son? There's not, none of that is relevant. Okay, what about the Ema Tneu in L'Oilo Suriya? Okay, so maybe say that the Pasuk will be teaching us that an Oilo Suriya is something you have to bring. There's no Chet involved. Yeah, they're the korban oil that you have to bring when you come on the Shalosh Regalim to the Azara. It is a choiva, There's no chet involved, and you don't. There's no neder and nedava involved because you're obligated to bring it.
The
pasuk says, "Below your roof, on a reifam." You shouldn't see my face empty. Okay. The answer is jumia de bincha. We still have to compare it with bincha. Ma bincha shein kavu leizman. Your son, there's no particular time of the year when children are born. Ashercha b'tzoncha shein kavu leizman. The same thing. Whatever the pasuk is telling us, ashercha and tzoncha, it has to be something. There's no fixed time of the year. Well, we're not done yet. And by the way, it is true, we're going to learn later in the Perek, that there are times for Ma'aseh Behemah during the year, but those are Midrabbanan. The Rabbanan set up certain times during the year when you should be taking Ma'aseh Behemah. But there are people doing any time during the year. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, what about... So the question is, ma bincha enibel akuach klal. Okay, then if you're gonna carry the comparison to bincha all the way through, you're gonna say your son is never something that's bought. It's something that your son was born within your household. Af shelcha v'tzoncha enibel akuach klal. You would have to say, fine, let's say, okay, we've eliminated everything else, so therefore we're down to only ma'aseh. But you should have to say then that it means that ma'aseh behemah does not apply at all if the animal was bought. Now, that can't be. Alama Omer Rav Asi Omer Rav Yechanan. Why do we find, no, that Rav Asi says in the name of Rav Yechanan, Lokach Asara Ubrin B'mei Iman, if you bought 10 unborn animals in their mother's wombs. Now, you can do that, by the way. You're able to, first of all, you could buy the mother together with the baby, but you could also make a deal with somebody. You're keeping the mother, but when the baby is born, it belongs to me. So it's possible to do that. And the din is kulam nichnasim ladir leifaser. Once those baby animals are born, you're going to bring them all into the pen and take ma'aser from them. So we see that there is a way to have an animal bought. Our Mishnah had said halakeach and yipater, but that means if you buy the animal after it's born. But if you buy it before it's born, or actually, Tosfos points out, we're going to learn as we go through the sugya, that actually what it is the cutoff point is when the animal is able to be brought as a korban. We know that an animal cannot be brought as a korban before it's 8 days old. So therefore, if you buy the animal any time before that point, then it will be chayev and ma'aseh behemah, according to the majority opinion. We're going to talk later a different opinion, but anyway. So you see that there is a way to buy it. So if you're comparing it to your son is not bought at all, so then the comparison doesn't work. The answer is omakrov tasa. Sure. But the pasuk uses the expression tasa, which is where we learned, therefore, that it refers to ma'aseh behemah, because that has to be something that you actually do, something that you cause it to be kaddish. We're learning from that something, another detail as well. Meaning, b'sh'as asiyah mi'et hakosuf. When is the pasuk excluding that if you bought it, that it's not chayev and ma'aseh behemah, only if it's at the time when the doing is supposed to take place. So therefore, not before it was born and not before 8 days old, because at that point, there's no doing yet, there's no asiya yet, because you can't designate it as ma'aseh behemah before it is 8 days old yet. Well, you can't, certainly can't before it's born, but again, as we're going to say later, according to the Chachamim, you can't before 8 days. Well, that's true, but I'm saying, even Tosfos is saying, based on the Sugya later, that even after it's born, during its first 8 days, you also can't designate it as ma'aseh behemah.
Right,
that's the point. In other words. So when he used the expression, asara ubrin b'mei iman, the reason why he's mentioning that, Tosfos says, first of all, Tosfos says that actually we're going to have an opinion later on of Rav Shimon ben Yehuda, who says that actually no, the cutoff would be when the baby is born, because according to him, even when the baby is underage for a korban, it's still counted towards ma'aseh behemah. We're going to have that discussion too. Halach is not like that, but the point is Rav Asi may have used the expression asara ubrin b'mei iman in order to cover that opinion as well.
To say that
everybody would agree if it was in the womb, then for sure it's chayev and ma'aseh behemah once it's born.
Once it's born, right.
But if you bought it after it's born, according to the Shimon ben Yehuda, that's possible.
And not before it was born, also.
Yeah. Okay. Again, according to the Shimon ben Yehuda, only if you bought it before it's born is it chayev and ma'aseh behemah. Because before it's born, you can't take ma'aseh behemah from it. Once it's born, he holds, you're already able to take ma'aseh behemah from it. I still have to wait a few more days before it's kosher for a korban. Doesn't matter, he says. Yeah. So therefore, that's the point. Rav Asi might be mentioning the point where they're in the mother's womb to say that everybody would agree in that case that it's chayav. Yeah. Okay.
As opposed to afterwards,
where it would be machlokas, right? Okay. Fine. So the point is, Rav is saying that the pasuk itself, is by using the word kaseh, is implying that the key point is the animal at the point of asiyah yet? At the point of asiyah, it has to be like your son that it was in, that it was born in your, that it was born in your possession.
So it does work.
So therefore it does work. Right. Okay. Fine. Getting back to what we just said, Amar Abasi, Amar Abyechen, Loka Hasara Uben B'mei Iman, we said if you bought 10 unborn babies, baby animals in their mother's wombs, Kol Mechnasam Adir Leisaser, eventually when those animals are born, you bring them all into the pen and take mites from them. So the question is, what do you mean? We just said in the Mishnah that if you bought it, that if you bought it, it's part of a mice of behemoth. So before we had Rava's answer, but now we're going to actually give the same answer in the name of somebody earlier. So Rabbi Elazar says, as an introduction to what he's going to say next, Rabbi Yochanan Chazoi Bechilma, last night I saw Rabbi Yochanan in a dream, and therefore that tells me Milsa Malya Amina, therefore I know that that's a sin, it's a good sin, that today I'm going to say something which is going to be well accepted in the Mishmerish. We had this at the beginning of the Mishmerish. When you see a tzaddik, and in particular, Rabbi Yochanan wasn't just any tzaddik, he was Rabbi Elazar's Rebbe. When he sees him in a dream, it's a siman that what he's going to say, that what he's thinking of is valid. Okay, so what's the answer? The same answer that Rava gave. Omar Kra, because the pasuk says Tasna, B'shasasiya, Miyatakasu. The pasuk is only excluding that the animal has to be in your possession by the time of Asiya. When it's in the womb, it's not the time of Asiya yet, because you don't count it towards Maisa Behema. Therefore, even if you didn't own it yet at that point, it's okay.
But in the womb, you
own it. No, the point is, but there's no Asiya yet. So therefore, that the doing, the counting of Maisa Behema, the counting and the designating of the tenth of Maisa Behema. So as long as some time before the Asiya, you purchase this animal, for example, in the womb, then it doesn't matter that there was a time during its life cycle that it didn't belong to. That's the point. Okay. Eisrei Reb Shimon al Yakim Reb Elazar, but Reb Shimon al Yakim asked the question in Reb Elazar. Okay, very nice, Reb Elazar. You saw Reb Yechon in a dream, all fine and good, but we still have a shaila on what, we still have a kasha on what you're saying. The kasha is, we learn in a braisa, halakeach chal, halakuach chal amachotuz man, that the concept of that if an animal was bought, that it's potter from Maisa Behema, applies to machotuz man. So, and mechutz man, meaning if it's less than 8 days old. So if you bought it before it gets old enough to be brought to the korban, you cannot. It doesn't get counted for ma'aseh behema. So what are you telling me, therefore, that if you bought it in the womb, then it is? The answer is amalei. He says to him, zu ena mishnah. That is not a valid braisa. Yeah, sometimes there are braisas. Okay, sometimes you have. We reject. We say that a braisa is not correct. Halacha. The imtim tefloim a mishnah. And if you want to say that it is a valid mishnah, that there is it does come from an actual tana. Fine. Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, he mishum Reb Shimon. Then it would be specifically according to the opinion of Reb Shimon ben Yehuda in the name of Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon plain is Reb Shimon ben Yehoi. This is Reb Shimon ben Yehuda, who is the Talmud of Reb Shimon ben Yehuda. De Omar, where he says. That he actually says, Mechosez man nichnas ladir leisaster. He says that yes, and we had this earlier in the Masechta, that yes, an underage animal does get counted towards Maisa Behema. And if it turns out that one is picked as a Maisa Behema, okay, so you wait a few days and then you bring it as a carbon. Unlike the Chachamim, we say that you can only start counting them once they're 8 days old. Because he says, Vahareyu kabachur. Because he says, Maisa Behema in that sense is just like a bachur. Ma bachur, kodesh lifnez manay, kodesh la'achaz manay. A bachur, it's kodesh as soon as it's born. Reb Shimon is pointing out, what's the comparison? It's like a bachur. A bachur becomes kodesh as soon as it's born, which is lifnez manay, because you still have to wait a week before you can bring it as a carbon. The kodesh la'achaz manay, okay, you don't bring it as a carbon on that day, it's still kodesh right away, and you just have to wait a week to bring it as a carbon. So he says, yes, the same thing can be as far as Mechutz Man, that it could be Kodesh before the time, and you'll be makriv it after the time.
Because it has to be
to be the same as the first. Because, yeah. Now, the halacha is not like Reb Shimon as far as Ma'aseh Behema. The halacha is like the Chachamim that say that you only count them for 8 days old. The halacha is like Reb Shimon to the extent that it is true other kinds of karbonis. Other kinds of karbonis, you're not supposed to be makdish them before they, but if you do, then they still have kedusha, and then fine, you'll wait till they're 8 days old, and then you'll be makdish them. Actually, the truth is, by the way, most karbonis, ideally, ideally, most korbanos you're actually supposed to wait till they're at least 30 days old to be makriz in, because then that way they're more mina mulcha, they're more choice. And 8 days, yeah, that's a different matter. But if you makriz them any time from the 8th day on, but yeah, but it's kosher. No, not kedina ben. We're talking about b'chor behema tahora. B'chor behema tahora, it's born right away. It's born. It's kaddish, but you can only be makriz it at least a week later. So you have to wait till it's 8 days old. So Rav Shimon says the same thing should apply to ma'aser behema. So therefore, it's fine. So Rabbi Lazar says to Rabbi Shimon ben Eliyakim, you're bringing me a brisa that says that if you bought the animal before when it was mechutzer's man, then it's potter from ma'aser. Maybe that's not even valid as a brisa. And even if you want to say it is, it would be specifically according to Rav Shimon. The Chachamim would disagree with that. The Chachamim who say that you can't count the animal towards ma'aser behema until they're at least 8 days old, they would also say, therefore, that if the animal was bought before that point, before that cutoff point, then yes, it is chayiv and ma'aser behema. Okay, but Rav Shimon Yochum didn't know. You have a brisa without an author's name attached. He thought it, so it was according to everybody. Tony Tana Kamedira. Okay. So the halacha is like a chachamim that you count the ones that you don't count the ones that are underage, the ones that are less than 8 days old. Therefore, if you bought an animal before that cutoff point, so you bought it in the womb or you bought it during the first 7 days, it does count towards ma'aser behema. You can, once it's born, then you do have to count them. Okay. Tani Tana Kamedi Rav. Okay. Tana taught a braisa in front of Rav as follows. We're going to see that we're going to relate this to what we were just talking about in a second. What is a case of esnan where you do bring it into the pen and take ma'aser from it? Now, esnan is like this. The Torah tells us you're not allowed to bring esnan zoyna as a korban.
It always has to be a zoyna.
That's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about that on Omid Beis. Wait. The Torah tells us that esnan zoyna you're not allowed to bring as a korban. We're going to learn more about that in Tumura, that's the Shem, in a few months. But what is that? Basically, esnan zoyna is the fee that a person pays to a zoyna to have relations with her. The Torah tells us that whatever it is you gave her is possible to be brought as a korban. If you trade it for something else, then that something else is butcher. But that's another matter. We'll learn about that in tomorrow. For example, the person gives her money and she uses that money to buy an animal, then that animal is kosher for a korban. But if you give her an actual animal, that animal is possible. Yeah. Okay, so what is a case of esnan where you would put it into the pen and use it and count it towards ma'aser? There's an animal that was given to a zayna. Kol shenosnela, the case would be, the braisa that according to Rav says, if the person gave the animal to the zayna, v'chaz of a lokhay hemena, and then he took it or bought it back from her. So now the point is, So now this animal will be possible as a korban. It's still considered esnan. The fact that he bought it back from her doesn't change that status. But nevertheless, all it is that now it still counts towards ma'aser behema because it belongs to him.
He redeemed the animal with money.
We don't mean that he took it back with stealing, because then that's another matter. No, the pashas would only bought it from her. Lokach in Gemara terminology usually means he bought it. Fine. So he gave her a certain animal. Now that animal is esnan, it's possible for a korban. Now he turned around and bought that animal back from her. So now it belongs to him again. Okay, but so now it's still one of his animals that he has to take ma'aser behema from. So he still puts it in the pen and counts it along with the other ones. So what happens if it comes out as the 10th one? It'd be the same thing as if a Baal Mum comes out the 10th. It means you're going to have to wait.
It has an effect, even if that doesn't
come as the 10th. One second. If you have a Baal Mum, you still put it in the pen, you still count it. If the Baal Mum comes out the 10th, okay, so you shecht it and you eat it. Same difference. The point is, it's possible for a korban. So if one of the other ones comes out 10th, then good, you bring it as a korban. If this particular one, which was used for esnan, comes out 10th, okay, so you wait till it develops a mum and then you shecht it and eat it.
So one second. Something I'm missing here. Why would you count it, and counting it, putting it in the pen, in a direct effect, it adds an animal to the whole group?
The same way as you count the balei mum, because in other words, it's still your animal. It's still your animal. So now the question is, So the question is, if the label is chaos, isn't it anyway possible because you bought it? So you gave it to her, or not you, let's say, a person gave it to her, and then he bought it back from her. So now it's a boar animal. We said that a boar animal is not counted. So that's Rav objects to that. So the Gemara says, Ish Shemitze, Hada Amar Rav Asi. Okay, so when Rav said that, he forgot what Rav Asi had just said. Amar Rav Yechanan, Loka Chasara Ubrin Mimei Iman, that if you bought 10 unborn animals in their mother's womb, Kolim Nechnasan Ladir Leisam, so that all of them go into the pen and you take mice from them. So in other words, therefore, so here would be the case. He didn't give her, a live animal. He gave her a pregnant animal with the deal that the baby is going to belong to you. The pregnant animal, once it's born, I want it back. But the baby animal you get to keep, and that's your essence. And now, after the baby is born, he buys it back from her. So therefore, again, therefore, it's not considered lakuach. It's not considered purchase. Because the deal was done before the deal was done while it was still in the loop.
So
that's the point. In other words, Rav's objection to the Braiser was, why would you be taking Meister? Why would you be counting this animal towards Meister if it was bought? The answer is because you bought it when it was in the womb. And when it was in the womb, we said before, Rav Asi says it can still count towards Meister Behemoth. Or even you bought it during its first week of its life.
How can you buy something that you don't?
Why can't you count it? So, you can still make a deal.
You can still buy it.
Yeah, because it's in the womb already. It's something that exists already. It exists in the womb.
It exists in the womb, but if you cannot count it...
No, you can... No, that when it's born, then you'll count it towards Meister Behemoth. That's the point. But it will be counted even though it was bought. Because, again, we said before, as long as it's bought before the cutoff point, before it's a week old...
You can buy it, but you cannot count it.
I don't understand what you're asking. You can buy it in the womb.
You can buy something in the womb, right?
You don't count it for Meister Behemoth until it's born or until it's 8 days old, rather.
That's the point. It's not born.
Because it exists already. It exists in the womb. It's not a double shalai bala.
You're buying the mother.
No, you're buying the baby. You're buying the unborn baby.
You can buy the unborn baby.
Yes, you can buy the
mother.
Yeah, let's say. Yeah, you could. By the way, I mean, the Rashash brings up a point over here that actually the Gemara tells us in Bava Kama, for example, that if a person stole a pregnant animal and then it gave birth, then actually the baby is considered to be his because the birth is considered a shinui. So why don't we consider it a shinui over here? We said that, for example, in the case of Esnan Zoyna, for example, if a person gives the Zoyna wheat and she grinds it up and makes flour out of it, then that flour can be used for a carbon, so it's considered a shinui. I don't. We mentioned it in office, I think, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, and the answer is, he says that relative to the dinim of Esnan, booth is not considered such a shinui. Relative to the dinim of Gezel and Gneva, yeah, it can be considered a shinui because the Chachamim want to be makel on the guy and make it easier for him to do tshuva. Rather than returning the actual animal, he can return the value of it. But as far as the dinim of Esnan, the birth, I mean, before it was an animal, now it's also an animal, just before it was in the womb, and now it's not. So it's not considered such a shinui. Okay. Fine. The Gemara asks. Not enough to make it that it would be kosher, It would still be possible as Esnan. Right. Okay, so the question is, why are we mentioning, why do we have to have the scenario that the person gave the unborn baby to the Zoyna, and then he bought it back from her, and was saying he counts it towards his animals from Meister Behemoth, just to have the case with Kiasu'ini. Why don't we just talk straight out? The question would be, she herself, does she count it towards her Meister Behemoth?
She would count it?
Well, if we're assuming that she's a Jewish woman, she also has a mitzvah of Meister Behemoth. So why isn't the case in the Braisa more straightforward? Person gave an unborn baby to a Zoyna as her Esnan. Once the baby is born and once it becomes 8 days old, then she counts it as one of the animals for her. Yeah, why not? The Pashas, yeah. The answer is the Zoynus Kursus. We have to say the Braisa must be talking about a Goyish Zoyna. Well, of course, it's just the senses usually changed. It was probably originally Goyo and Ocarus or something. So the question is, still, Veloitma Bezoni Yisraelis with Kaasri. Okay, still, why didn't the Braisa give us the case where it was a Jewish Zoyna and talk about the case whether she herself counts it towards her animals from Meister Behemoth? Why this convoluted case where we have to have that a Yid gave it to a Goyish Zoyna, and then she being a Goyta, she's not taking Meister Behemoth, so then he buys it back from her, still before the 8 days, and we're talking about whether he counts it as one of his 10 animals or not. Why not just say straightforwardly that it was a Zoyna Yisraelis and ask whether she herself has to? The answer is because the Braisa wants to tell us another Chiddush, Kamash Malon. The Braisa, by the way, wants to tell us another din, De Zoyna Yisraelis Lehabi Esnan. That, if it was a Jewish Zoyna, what the man gave to her would not be considered Esnan. It would actually be Mutter as a carbon. And that is Kida Abaya. That is like the opinion of Abaya. The Amar, one second, we'll talk about the halacha in a second. The Amar Abaya, Zoyna Kusis, when you have a Goyesha Zoyna, Esnana Osir, if a Yid gives her an animal or what have you as Esnan, then that becomes possible to bring as a korban. The Koyan, Habalah, on the other hand, though, if a Koyan has relations with this Goyta, Eine Loike Mishum Lo Yichal Zare. He will not get malchus on the grounds of being machalo his children. Now, if a kohen has relations with a zoyna or a halala or grusha, then he gets malchus. Isha zoyna v'chalala lo yikachu v'isha grusha me'isha lo yikachu. A kohen gadol lo yikachu means to marry them. But okay, in addition, you have with a kohen gadol, you have a mitzvah v'lo yichalo zarei v'amav. But what we're saying, even a Kohen Gadol, for example, even a Kohen Gadol, that a Kohen Gadol has a separate mitzvah, he's not allowed to be mechalal his zera. If he is, then he's chayav malchus for that alone. So the point is, in other words, we're saying if a Kohen has relations with a goita, he's not getting malchus on the grounds of that he was mechalal zara. Because as the Gemara is going to finish off over here, it's not considered zara. Because we know that the offspring of the child of a relation between a Jewish man and a Goyish woman is a Goy. So therefore, it's not considered Zare. It's not considered his descendant.
He's not as a family.
The point is, Zare means his children. He has to make sure that his children are not Chalalim. In this case, his children aren't Chalalim. The child is not even considered his Mahalacha. So therefore, now he could be getting malchus on other grounds. He could be getting, we learned in Avodah Zorah, there's malchus derabanan that a yid gets for having relations with a goita because of nida, shifcha, goya, whatever. But we're talking about here on a daraisa level.
We could talk about a
kohen hediot. Pashtus, we're talking about a kohen hediot or kohen gadol, but whatever. The point is, yeah. Okay. So if it was a goita, on the one hand, there is an inyan of esnan, it is considered a zoyna. On the other hand, a kohen who has relations with her is not being over on lo yichalal zara, right? On the other hand, Zoyna Yisraelis continues Abaya. If the Zoyna was a Jewish woman, Esnan the Mutter, then the Esnan that a Yid gives her is Mutter. Yes, even for a korban. The Koyan, Abalel, Loika Mishum Lo Yichal Zarei. On the other hand, if a Koyan has relations with this Zoyna, then he is getting Malchus for Lo Yichal Zarei. So with a Jewish woman, because with a Jewish woman, the child is considered his. But it's a Cholol. Because we're talking about, okay, we have to realize one thing. You have a definition of Zoyna. You have a definition of Zoyna as far as the dinim of Koyin, as far as the dinim of a Koyin. The definition of Zoyna as far as a Koyin, that a Koyin is not allowed to have relations with a Zoyna, is any woman who's had relations with somebody who she's also to marry, or is also to marry her. So that would include if she had relations with a Goy. It would include if she was an Eishes Ish and had relations with anybody. It would include if she had relations with close relatives. Anybody, and actually you have, when we learn about it in Smurah, Beth Hashem, we'll talk about what level of issue does it have to be to make her a Zoyna? Would it be only something that's Chayav Kares or Mrs. Bastin? Would it be something that's even Chayav Malkus? Would it be something that's even only an Issur Esther? So as far as Zoyna, if I remember correctly, it's anything from Lav and higher. So for example, so if a woman has relations with a goy, that it's not, well, it basically what it is if it's an issur lav or if ein kedushin tosfos. Kedushin are not tosfos with a goy, therefore a woman has relations with a goy. And by the way, it doesn't matter whether it was consensual or not, even if she was raped, she's also to a kohen. If it was with a goy, she's also to a kohen, she's considered a zoyna. If it was with Chayvi Lavin, one example would be if she was a Yavama who married without getting Chalitza or Yibum. There are a number of other examples of Chayvi Lavin that would make her a Zoyna, if I recall correctly.
It would be a Lav and
a Lav or in Kedushin Tosin. So if it's something that's high of Kodesh or Mitzvah Bastin, by definition, ain't Kedushin Tosin, so therefore automatically that makes it a Zoyna. If I remember correctly, also Chai V'Lavin. Anyway, that's as far as the dinim of Kodesh. For example, no, you have the other way around. You can have things that are alive, but still Kedushin or Tosin. For example, one example is the Yavama L'Shuk. Another example actually would be, for example, a Koyin with a Grusha. Kedushin or Tosin, but yeah.
Not Tosin.
What's not Tosis, things that are Koris, or Mrs. Bastin. An Eishes Ish with anybody, a Jewish woman with a Goy, because Kedushin aren't Tosis, yeah. A woman with close relatives, with a Raya, yeah. So you have it. So again, you have a definition of zoyna as far as koyin, and then you have a definition of zoyna as far as esnan zoyna. So Abaye is saying they're not necessarily the same thing. So therefore, in other words, again, if it was a zoyna yisraelis, on the one hand, as far as the dinim of koyin, he is getting malchus because he had relations with a zoyna and his children from her halalim. On the other hand, as with a goita, it's not considered a zoyna on the as far as the dinim of a koyin. On the other hand, it is considered a zoyna as far as the dinim of esnan. So let's analyze. Zoyna kusnis esnana osir says Abaya that a goyish zoyna, the esnan would kusnis, again, meaning generically a goita. Esnana osir, the esnan that a yid gives her would be osir. And how do we know that? Because he says, gomar te'eva, te'eva may arai. Because he learned the Zeta Shava. How do we know what the definition of zoyna is relative to the dinim of esnan? We learn by a Zeta Shava from Arias, where it says te'eva by Arias. It says te'eva by esnan. You know, you can't bring esnan of the korban because it's toya bat Hashem. Therefore, ma arayas the lekatsi bo kiddushi. Therefore, by arayas, the definition of arayas is that kiddushin aren't toyfus in them. They're all things that are chayav koris and mitzvah based in, and kiddushin aren't toyfus. At zoyna, b'hach the lekatsi bo kiddushi. That's the same thing. A zoyna is defined for the purpose of esnan zoyna as someone with whom kiddushin are not toyfus. Kedushin are not tofus between a yid and a goy. Therefore, kedushin are not tofus between this koyin and this goyish zoyna. Therefore, she's considered a zoyna, and therefore the esnan he gives her is considered esnan zoyna. On the other hand, the koyin abal leh ain't a loyka mishum lo yichal zarei. On the other hand, he's not getting malchus if he's a koyin on the grounds of lo yichal zarei, de lo yichal zarei omer achmana, because the pasuk is saying he should not allow his children to be chalolim v'chaylav zarei. Who in this case, it's not his children because the children follow the mother and therefore they're goy.
Even though it doesn't count,
the esnan does count because she's a goita, but again, it could be counted towards ma'isa behema, as we said before. If you buy it back, if the yid buys it back from her, he still counts it towards his ma'isa behema. That was the point. That was the b'risa that we mentioned. As long as he buys it back before the cutoff point. And then the flip side of it is, Shittim Ukabethis adds, the flip side is with the Zoni Yisraelis. The Esnan is Mutter because Kedushin would be Tosis with her. If the Kohen wanted, he could have done Kedushin with her, and it would be valid. He'd be over on a lot because she's a Zoni. But nevertheless, it's still, Kedushin would be Tosis. Therefore, according to Abaya's definition, that doesn't fit under the thing of Te'eva, and therefore can't be considered Esnan. On the other hand, because Kedushin would have been Tosis if he had given her actual Kedushin. On the other hand, he's getting malchus for Lo Yichal Zarei because the children are considered his children and they're halalim. Now, the halacha is actually not like Abaye in that regard. The halacha is like Rava in the Gemara and Tmura. We have a machloikus between Abaye and Rava on this point, and as usual, the halacha is like Rava, where Rava says, we don't use that Zeta Shava. We say that anyone who's considered a Zoyna as far as a Koyed is considered a Zoyna as far as the Dinim of Esnan. So that would mean a Zoyna Yisraelis would also, the Esnan for her would be also. Because the fact is, the Koyed has an Isser Lav to marry her.
So he wouldn't hold of this Zeta Shava,
and therefore the Braisa that we were quoting before would be valid according to Abaya, but not according to Rava, and not according to the actual final Halacha.
Okay.
Mishnah says, Ha'achin v'hashutfer. If you have brothers and partners. Now the girsa that we have in front of us is the girsa of the Rambam also, which is we're talking about two different cases. Number one, brothers who are still managing their father's estate as if they were partners. They didn't divide up the estate. And then on the other hand, you have a separate case when two people join together in a partnership. That's according to the Rambam. According to Rashi, the girsa is ha'achin ha'shutfin, without the vav, which means we're talking about a case where you have brothers who divided up the estate, and then they rejoin their part to make a partnership. So, shechayovin b'kolboy, so that's the thing. You have two different girsas. So you have ha'achin v'hashutfin, which is how we have it in front of us in the Gemara, which would be how the Rambam learns it, and you have ha'achin hashutfin, which would be Rashi's girsa. So you have like this. Now you have two different dinim that apply differently to partners and not. First of all, you have a as far as machta shekel. We know the Torah tells us you have to give Machs the Shekel every year to the Beis Mikdash. When you give Machs the Shekel, you're supposed to give, in certain cases, or you have different opinions of Tanoim exactly what the cases are, but in certain cases, you're supposed to give, along with the Machs the Shekel, a little extra amount called a kolboy. And basically, the reason for it is, first of all, because Rashi gives two explanations. First of all, because when you're giving a master shekel, or in this case, when we're talking about two people giving jointly a master shekel, and you need to weigh it out, how do you weigh things in those days with a balance scale? It's very difficult to make sure that it's exactly balanced. So therefore, you need a little extra to make sure that it's balancing correctly and to make sure that you're actually giving a full master shekel. That's one idea. Rashi says another idea is because if you're supposed to be giving a half a shekel. If you're giving a full shekel, or two people are doing it together over here, then there's money changing involved. There's half shekels have to be converted to full shekels and vice versa, and there's money changers to be paid. So for those kinds of reasons, you have the concept of paying a kobold together with a master shekel. That's sort of one, according to the first explanation, is to make sure that you have the full amount, and according to the second explanation, it's commission. Yeah. Okay. So, and then on the other hand, you have another din, namely Maisa Behemah. So the Mishnah says, Shechayovin b'kolboin, in cases where they are chayav in kolboin, when they give their master shekel, in such cases, turin Maisa Behemah, they will be potter from Maisa Behemah. Again, according to Rashi, we're talking about over here, these brothers divided up their father's estate, then they rejoined in a partnership. So if they give the master shekel jointly, if they give one shekel, one full shekel, to cover both their master shekels, then they're going to have to give a kolboin with it. But on the other hand, being that they're partners, they're potter from Maisa Behema, because as we're going to learn in the Gemara, animals that belong to partners are potter from Maisa Behema. It has to belong to you, singular. Right? On the other hand, Chayovin b'maisa behema, but in a case where they were chayiv in maisa behema, for example, Rashi says if they didn't divide up the estate yet, if they're still managing the estate as if it was their father's estate, then we consider it as if, so then it's considered as if it was still their father's property. Now, when a person gives master shekel on behalf of his children, he is potter from kolbein. He himself is chayiv for kolbein for himself, but their father's dead. He's not giving master shekel anymore. Now it's as if he's giving on behalf of his children, therefore they are potter from kolbein. Because it's ineffective as if he's giving on behalf of them. But it doesn't matter. Because they haven't divided up yet, it's considered as if their father. So Rashi says the difference is when two people are giving together one shekel, one full seller for themselves, then you need a kolboin, because again, either you need to make sure the weight is exact or because you need the commission. But if you have a person giving a complete sella on behalf of two other people, then you don't have to do a kolboin, because Rashi says that's usually how it is. If a person is chayav two master shekels, he's going to give a full shekel. You don't need any extra weighing, and you don't need any commission. So therefore, in that case, they would be potter from kolboin. Well then, chayavin b'maisa behema. In that case, then chayavin b'maisa behema turim na kolboin. But in a case where there's chayav and maisa behema, namely where they didn't split up the estate yet, so therefore it's considered still as if it was their father's property, and their father being as an individual person has to give maisa behema, they'll be potter from kolboin, because again, it's as if their father is giving on their behalf.
So you give a kolboin when it's...
When you have two separate people combining together to give one stella on behalf of both of them, then you need to give a kolboin.
Separate ownership, right.
But then you potter from Maisa Behema, because then joint ownership makes you potter from Maisa Behema.
Right, but you have to give a kolban.
And vice versa, when you're chayav in Maisa Behema, namely if they didn't divide up the estate to begin with, then they're chayav in Maisa Behema, because it's still considered to be the property of their father. It's one ownership, but on the other hand, they're potter from kolban, because again, it's as if one person is giving Maisa Shekel on behalf of two other people. So the Mishnah spells out. If they acquired animals from the undivided estate, and Rashi understands that konu doesn't mean they bought, it means that the estate is in their possession and included animals. So then they're chayav in maisa behema, because again, those animals are still considered to belong to their father since they didn't divide up the estate. v'imlav, and if not, if they bought animals afterwards, turing, then they're positive. Ma'aseh behemah, because then it's considered to belong to a partnership. Because if they didn't get the animals to begin with, yeah, then these are animals that are bought. But cholku, if they divided up the estate, chozru v'nishtaku, and then they recombine together to make a partnership, then chayav and the kolbein. So then again, the chayav and kolbein, because you have separate ownership over here, you have joint ownership, where therefore the chayav and kolbein, because each one is giving max the shekel for themselves. But then they're potter from Maisa Behema, because then it's like any other case of partnership where partners are potter from Maisa Behema.
So she's buying animals.
No, according to Rashi Konu in our Mishnah, it doesn't mean they bought, it means that they acquired. In other words, that when the estate, when their father died, there were animals, they inherited animals as part of the estate. Right.
But when you buy an animal.
We said before, if you buy, then you're potter.
Then you're potter.
Yeah.
It's only when you have your animal born.
Right. So over here, when the animals, if they never divided the estate, then if they never divided the estate, there's no partnership over here. It's still considered to be their father's property. Therefore, Maisa Behema applies, but no Kobin. And if they divided and then we partner together, then it's the other way around. Again, according to the Rambam, that we're talking two separate cases, then the Rambam would learn that Konu means literally they bought. Because the Rambam understands we have two different cases over here. One where you have brothers who have their individual parts of the property, and then you have partners who join together. Okay. So there's more thoughts. We learn in a Braisa. The pasuk says yielcha. The pasuk says any animal that belongs to you, singular, then you have to you give ma'aseh behemah. V'lo shel shutvus, meaning not if it belongs to a partnership. Because lecha is singular. Well, no, we had a dinner. We used lecha for it. We didn't mention partnership before, except in our mission. So you would think that applies even if they acquired animals as part of the original estate. No, therefore the pasuk says, it shall be, meaning regardless, you have to give ma'aseh behemah. So again, the question is, again, the context of this pasuk is it's in Parshas Korach, where it lists the matnas kohona, and it's talking about b'chor, which is one of the 24 matnas kohona. It's not talking about ma'aseh. And again, the answer is, it can't apply to b'chor, because there is a concept of giving a b'chor from an animal that belongs to partners, because the pasuk mentioned the b'choris of your plural cattle or your plural sheep. So therefore, in other words, even if two people own an animal in partnership, it's chayiv and b'chor. Therefore, t'nei'in and ma'aseh behemah, therefore you have to apply it to ma'aseh behemah. And say, therefore, that partnership exempts animals from ma'aseh behemah. We can't apply it to b'chor, because b'chor does apply to animals that belong to partners. So therefore, of necessity, it has to apply to ma'aseh behemah. Okay. Omer Rav Yirmiyah. So Rav Yirmiyah says, actually, it's not so simple. Our Mishnah made it sound like it's always interdependent. Whenever you're chayav and korban, you're always potter from ma'aseh behemah, and vice versa. Rav Yirmiyah says, not necessarily. There can be a situation where they're chayav in both, kolban and ma'aseh behemah, or pomim shechayav in zeh v'zeh, sometimes they can be potter from both. Pomim shechayav in the kolban of turim ma'aseh behemah, sometimes, as the Mishnah said, they can be chayav in kolban, potter from ma'aseh behemah, or pomim shechayav in ma'aseh behemah, of turim and kolban. What are the cases? Chayav in zeh v'zeh. What would be the case where they're chayav in both? Would be shechoko b'ksofim v'lechoko b'behemah. If they started dividing up the estate, they divided up the money, and then they repartnered together with it. No, the money, they inherited money and animals from their father. So let's say they split up the money, and then they repartnered in it, but they never split up the animals. So as far as the money is concerned, it's now a partnership. Each one is giving Meister, it is giving Max the Shekel out of his own money. Therefore, they have to give a Kolban. The animals,
the money that they divided,
they're giving a Kolban. And from Meister behemah, the animals, they never divided. So that does still belong to them. So therefore, they're chayiv and ma'aseh behemah. Yeah. Turin mizeh mizeh. What would be the case where they're potter from both? The other way around. Shechokah b'behemah, like chokah b'ksafim. If they divided up the animals and then repartnered in the animals, and they never divided up the money. So again, the money is still considered as if their father is giving on behalf of the both of them. Therefore, they're potter from kolban. The behemoth, since they belong to a partnership now, then they're potter. Chayav and b'kolban of turim ma'aseh behemah. When would they be chayav and kolban and potter ma'aseh behemah? Shechokah b'zeh b'zeh. If they divided both of them and then partnered in them again, when would they be chayav and ma'aseh behemah? Turim and kolban would be, as the Mishnah said, shalai chokah b'zeh b'zeh. If they didn't divide anything, Okay, so the question is, pshita, isn't all that obvious, based on, yes. The answer is, chokul b'heimah b'lech chokul b'ksafim et tzrichalei. Yes, but the chidush of what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying is the case where they divided the animal and not the money, where you're saying, therefore, that they're potter from both. What's the chidush? Safadai d'chamina, because you would think to say, kibin d'chokul b'heimah, once they divided up the animals, galu d'aitayu d'la miflag kaini, it means they already intend to eventually split up the rest of the estate also. No, that's passed over by Maisa Behem. Here we're talking about Maisa Machta Shekel. V'lechayvo b'kolboin, therefore we should obligate them in kolboin, because eventually they are going to split up the money as well. Yeah, kamash malam, that is the chiddush. As long as they haven't actually split it up, it's still considered to be the undivided estate. It's still their father's. Even if they
wrote
a shtar, then maybe it's considered. It's already divided. I don't know. But whatever. The point is, here where they divided up the animals, even though that's already the beginning of splitting up the estate, as long as they didn't actually divide up the money, then therefore they're still potter from kolboin because their father is in effect giving on behalf of both of them. Okay.